This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 7, Episode 36, a world record attempt. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we talk about the world record attempt for the longest net that's coming up very shortly. We also talk about Ashwin's second fastest bowler to ever get to 200 test wickets. We help cricketers with developing fast hands and with a bowling run-up. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This is half an hour or so of cricket chat, talking about improving your game or helping others to improve their game. My name's David Hinchliffe. I look after things here, and helping me to help you are two very fine cricket coaches, the first of which is the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garris. How are you?
I'm very well. Thanks very much.
Good. Great. Good to hear from you. Some microphone problems a few minutes ago, but we're all up and running.
Yeah, the microphone problem was called Graham Thorpe because he was talking for far too long in a meeting, which meant I couldn't go to my bag and get my headphones. So I blame completely Graham Thorpe for that. He's still going, actually. I ended up just going to the back of the room through the middle of his meeting and going to get them. He gave me a nice little nod to give me a seal of approval so I don't feel that I've betrayed him too much.
And while Gareth picks those names up off the floor, we can chat with the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers.
Hello there. How are you?
So which former international cricketer do you have to walk past to get your microphone?
Well, I was kind of on hold online with a certain David Hinchliffe for a while there, so take that one, Mr. Garraway.
I can't compete.
Well, as you know, Lavers, I announced my retirement from international cricket a couple of years ago, and so I don't know.
Yeah. Didn't we all?
But somebody who is still playing international cricket is Ashwin, Indian spinner, batsman, all-rounder, I suppose you could say. And he has achieved a very great feat recently of getting to 200 test wickets in just 37 matches, which is the second fastest ever. And when you consider that it wasn't that long ago that, you know, he was considered pretty much a guy who could bowl all right in one day international cricket, but he was never going to do anything in test matches. It's quite a story, really. And so I was wondering what we could learn from his story and how spinners can turn themselves into whatever they want to be able to do with enough sort of practice and hard work and determination. Is that the story that you get from Ashwin?
I think that's part of the story. I mean, I have to say, I've always been a monster fan of his because, as much as anything else, even when he didn't bowl well in the early parts of his career or didn't bowl consistently well in the early parts of his career, he was always a monster competitor to play against, and he was always in the game, you know, whether it be in the field, whether it be when he was bowling, and over a very short period of time, he developed into an incredibly obdurate, to start off with, batter, and now a very good batter. So he was somebody that if he was ever on the team list against either Ireland or England, if he wasn't on the team list, I was always fairly happy because his character made him stick it out in a game of cricket. And I think we've probably seen exactly that same character come to the fore through the times where he's been challenged by people and he's been labelled by people as being a one-day bowler, wrongly in my opinion, but he has been, and he's sort of stuck two fingers up to him and said, well, actually, I'm going to keep working hard, I back myself, and he's developed that, or he has always, that resilience, I think, both on the cricket field but also off of it, to make the most of himself. And it's no surprise that he's done well. Probably is a bit of a surprise that, you know, he's been breaking records along the way as he has, but good on him.
Lavers, have you had a chance to have a look at the way that he plays and seen anything that is going to help other people who are in a situation where they're getting slightly pushed into one area and they feel like they can be a broader type of player than what everybody thinks they can do.
Well, I think the main thing is he plays pretty hard, doesn't he? And he tries to get the most out of what he's got available to him. And I think a lot of people can have a restriction imposed upon them and they can almost believe what they're being told, when ultimately I would imagine that most of the time when people are getting told you're not a one-day bowler or you're not an aggressive batsman or you're not able to spin the ball, all it is a reflection of the present and what's happened in the past. And it just takes someone to open up their mind a little bit, and hopefully it'll come from the coach to say, look, this is what you are at the moment, but what do you want to become, or what do we want you to become together, and how can we go about doing it, rather than just accepting what you've got at any given time. And he's obviously, Gareth has pointed out there, his batting has become a very, very effective string to his bow, and his bowling, I think from his bowling point of view, he's probably, it's quite a lucky, not lucky actually, it's probably the wrong way to, it's quite an advantageous position of getting into test cricket when he's obviously a very, very comfortable international cricketer now, and he's learnt his game, he's learnt more about his ability to play in the 4 and 5 day format, and he's coming in quite a settled position, I would imagine, and he has done over the last 2 or 3 years, whereas usually there's a lot of that kind of learning period for someone where they might have 18 months of learning how to play at that level. He's actually had a lot of time away from that cricket whilst still being an international cricketer. So he's had the access to all the best coaches, the brightest minds, been given the time and the opportunity to work and refine his methods in that 4 and 5 day competition. And then when he's been dropped into it, he's ready to go. He's not learning on the job like so many international cricketers over the years have done, including the likes of the Shane Warnes and the Jimmy Andersons, if you think about the people at the top of the tree these days. But he's gone straight into it, and he's hit the ground running because he's probably had that slight delay in entering the test arena on a permanent basis.
I think one of the other things that's been absolutely crucial in his development as a player is the fact that Duncan Fletcher was around during the time where he'd been labelled previously as a one-day bowler. And knowing Fletcher as well as I do, he likes character, he likes spinners he can bat. And those two things Ashwin's got in abundance. So it was a no-brainer that Fletcher was going to look to pick him. If we look back to the England side that Fletcher had, and I'm not saying Ashley Giles is as good a bowler as Ravi Ashwin has turned into, but in terms of the character that Ash had, that competitive nature, the ability to be a bowler, a catcher and a batter, batting in that sort of 8-9 position initially, but in Ravi's case, you know, sort of 8-7 position and now a little bit higher. Fletcher saw all the hallmarks of the type of Fletcher cricketer and backed him. And you can't get away from the fact that whilst it's great to be resilient and have all of those characteristics, it needs a coach to recognise somebody's strengths rather than just looking at the output to back them. And he was backed by Fletcher, and look at the results.
It is quite a skill to be able to pick something in someone and then go on a hunch, be able to go, right, you know, I think this guy can do this, actually. And that's one of the things that was the hallmark of Duncan Fletcher's time as England coach, wasn't it? To be able to pick someone out and say, you know, this guy's got something, I think he can do something more than just the pure numbers are telling us. And he did that several times, didn't he?
He's done it throughout his whole coaching career, whether it was at Western Province when he started, where he unearthed supreme talents in people like Herschel Gibbs and Jack Callis. I mean, Herschel is a different type of character, yet Fletcher was somebody who saw some good in him and backed him at a time where it had been easy to have turned discipline book on him and say no thank you. Jack, on the other hand, didn't do anything wrong in terms of discipline, but he recognised that there was an inner strength and drive in there and developed him. And there were many others besides, but he did the same with Glamorgan, and he handles those tough characters really well and brings out the best in people's characters. And we saw it with the likes of Triscothic and Vaughan, probably most prominently within England. And Ashwin is an example of somebody who's ticked the Fletcher boxes and then been back to the hill.
You would have thought Ashwin would be one of the I would have thought, I always thought it'd been one of the easier people to pick. Herschel Gibbs, probably not quite so easy. Jack Callis, a very easy one to pick in terms of his attitude and how he's going about it. But it is impressive when someone can not only pick the obvious choice and pick the candidates who would display all the right things, but also pick something in the people who don't display the right things and then bring them out in them. So he's done very well, and I'm sure lots of people will follow his kind of approach in the future.
I just wanted to wrap up this section by a little news announcement coming up very shortly. Pitch Vision is going through a little change. We're going to add some extra features to the website to allow you to interact with people, post your thoughts, your ideas, your messages to other people, communicate with people, videos. That's going to be quite exciting. I urge everybody to go and have a look at that. Start following us. All we've got: Gareth, Lavers, myself, Pitch Vision Academy, and of course the Pitch Vision jobs section. So if you've ever wanted to send your question into the Pitch Vision podcast, now you've got your chance to talk directly to the people who are hosting it.
Awesome, sounds brilliant. Yeah, looking forward to that.
Sounds brilliant, yeah.
But for now, let's move into the mailbag. A couple of questions that have been sent in by listeners to the show, or maybe readers to the Pitch Vision website, and we do our best to answer those questions. And whether we do that or not, we pick a winner, which is the best question of the week, that wins an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And you can send your questions into us by emailing coach@pitchvision.com. Varun is the first person who's done it this week, and Varun says, "Do you have any drills on developing fast hands? For me, most of my hitting ability comes from timing and technique of keeping my shape, as well as tactics learned from Pitch Vision. My issue is with hitting at will. Is there a way technically to achieve this? I don't exactly backload, as stated in your article, Hitting for Power, but I do have more weight on my back leg with only the balls of my front foot touching the floor and my head and chin over the toes of my front foot. My big hits almost always go to the leg side from mid on to fine leg, and on the off side as an off drive or a cut. Is this setup optimal?"
Well, there's lots of drills for developing hand speed, but ultimately the thing that they're all testing is how your kinetic chain works. And they're all trying to develop different aspects of the kinetic chain. Now, the kinetic chain starts when we move forward, we put a load into the ground, we receive an equal and opposite load coming back up through our legs, up into our hips, then up into our shoulders, along our arms, into our hands, and ultimately into the bat. So hand speed and bat speed, you know, is what you're looking for and what you're asking for. So often people think by swinging harder, they are creating more bat speed, and that isn't true, because we have a multiplying effect as that momentum, that pace goes up the body, as the muscle groups that we're using get smaller, because obviously the leg muscle groups are pretty big, and then we get down to forearms and hands in particular, small muscle groups, they will go they'll multiply in pace basically, and that's why you see the best people hitting the ball really hard. So how do they do it? Well, firstly, they develop their ability to have a nice stable base. So a stable base, if the base is still moving through contact, then obviously you are sharing your energy between the movement of your legs and the movement of the bat. And what you want to do is you want to isolate that energy going up the kinetic chain into the hands and into the bat. So a stable base will pass that energy up the legs into the hips, into the hip region as quickly as possible. Those hips will rotate. So you'll notice when the biggest hitters hit, they aren't in a sideways on position to the bowler with the hips. Their hips are square. And it's exactly the same if we're talking about fast bowlers. It's exactly the same as if we're talking about people generating spin or trying to generate velocity in throwing. Those hips have to rotate. And when those hips rotate, slow and stop and stabilize, then that momentum gets thrown further up the body, through the core, through the torso, up into our shoulders. Then there'll be a delay before the shoulders rotate and turn. And when they slow and stabilize, all of the energy that is multiplied now from the hips to the shoulders will be thrown along the arms. And you'll notice that there'll be a thing called a bat lag. So the bat will stay behind. Everything else will move. The bat will stay behind, and when all the energy is in the hands, then the hands will come through, and that's how you generate hand speed. So how do you do that? Well, you can do things like, for example, hitting with heavier bats and then lighter bats. You'll get the strength element of hitting with a heavier bat, where you're trying to move a heavier load through the same space, and that's a really good thing to do. So you can get bat weights that they use in baseball to stick around the handle. You can just have a heavier bat or use somebody else's heavier bat. That's really good. And then you can use a lighter bat, and obviously you'll be moving a lighter load through the same thing, and after training that, you'll find that those hands will go incredibly quickly because they're used to moving a really heavy load. So that's one way of doing it. Other ways of doing it is having a real emphasis to use your hips, to rotate your hips, which isn't something that we generally coach within cricket, and historically we haven't coached, but getting that rotation of a hip. Duncan Fletcher, going back to him, used to talk about this in, 2004, when I first met him. He was going on about this way ahead of his time. And he said that the golf swing, where exactly the same thing happens and those hips rotate, has got to be the precursor to us hitting the ball large. And how right he was, even though nobody wanted to agree with him back in 2004. So we can start getting those hips going. And now how do you do that? Well, you can get some of that TheraBand, get somebody to stand to the side of you and try and resist your hips, and then you get used to working against that extra bit of resistance. You've got to work harder. When that resistance goes away, you've trained the hips to rotate faster, and then you keep that going into your bat swing. So basically, there are two ways. There are loads of other ways: hitting heavy balls, hitting light balls, having an emphasis on keeping the hands back to the last moment and let them come through at the end. There's heaps of drills that can be done, but the main thing I want you to get out of this is an understanding of how bat speed and hand speed is generated, because we hear commentators talk about it. Do you train hand speed? Well, yeah, they just think that it's swinging the bat harder. It's not that at all. It's about getting that technique, that kinetic chain working optimally for you.
And then, Lavis, how does that tie into someone who, I mean, the way that the question was asked, Varun was saying that, you know, he's talking about more traditional things like keeping my shape and all the rest of it. So how does that tie into someone who is used to playing more traditional shots? Is it that they have to add new ways of playing to what they already have, or do they have to change what they're doing to bring in this idea of hitting the ball with faster hands?
Yeah, I think the idea of adding something new or changing too much is probably not quite as apparent as you'd think, because it's the kind of thing that a lot of people will do to a certain degree, quite naturally anyway. What we're looking to do is enhance the movements that they do have. So you might find, or you probably will find, that most batsmen will have a degree of hip rotation. They will have a degree of that bat lag behind the body movement. They will have a small amount or even a big amount of the kind of things we're talking about. What it is pinpointing which areas need a little bit more of enhancement, maybe a little bit more focus, and potentially can just be looked at a little bit more in training. So whether it's just 5 minutes in a training session working on some hip rotation prior to bat coming through, or working on some bat swings with a heavy trainer or something like that, then those kind of things are easily added in. But I would be very surprised if almost all the batsmen you see don't have some degree of the kind of things we're talking about. And it's just bringing them out and spending a little bit of time working on part of a movement rather than always thinking about the whole movement. And yes, we can start that by offering them the outcome and saying, we want you to go and do these things as part of a big shot. But more often than not, you might just have to break it down a little bit and identify the individual areas that need a bit more focus. But I mean, a lot of this ties in very neatly with the fast bowling stuff. And as Gareth said, the spin bowling stuff, it is about power development. It's about working not only in straight lines, but using our rotational power around straight lines. And the more you can make that happen, the greater the outcome you're going to see.
Next question is from Nasif. And Nasif says, can you give me some tips on bowling run-up? I don't have any rhythm. And during my run-up, I take huge strides sometimes, and sometimes small strides. My coach told me that I lose a great amount of my pace in the run-up itself. How far should I run? Should I reach Should I reach my maximum speed when at the point of delivery?
Well, it's important to carry momentum into your delivery stride and into your bowling action. It's more important for some types of bowlers than others. Those types of bowlers would be a front-on bowler because they're not being able to use as much rotation in their bowling as somebody who gets side-on and then rotates around their axis to propel the ball down the other end. So they've got to carry, front-on bowlers have got to carry more pace in. So an example being going back to an old coach of mine and an old teammate of mine, Malcolm Marshall, who would run in with great velocity behind him, and the more velocity he carried through in his run-up, the quicker he bowled. So that would be the first thing. I don't know whether you're a front-on bowler. I don't know whether you're a side-on bowler. If we knew that, then we'd be able to be really specific on that. But every bowler needs to carry some momentum in. Otherwise, all you're doing is getting to the crease and having to produce even more force and naturally go through the body, which has obviously got some injury and health repercussions on it. So having some velocity and momentum going into your delivery stride is important. In terms of no rhythm, often that starts either with the fact that you haven't marked your run-up out appropriately for yourself, and that's something that Sam might want to talk about in a bit. But the other thing is about having control over your first few strides when you kick off. And most bowlers I work with that struggle for rhythm will talk to me about rhythm, and I'll look back at their first couple of strides, first few strides as they accelerate from stationary through to getting into their running, and it will be incredibly inconsistent. So it's important to understand how we accelerate. And if you have a look at the real best runners, so I mean, historically, I was watching the telly last night and there was a thing on Michael Holding. Well, there's probably never been a more graceful approach to the wicket than him. He was called Whispering Death by Dickie Bird as a result of the way that he carried himself across the ground, that he was so efficient that you couldn't actually hear his footsteps as he was running into bowl. But he was absolute poetry in motion. But the start of his run-up, he would lean forward and get his shoulders and his head going forward, which would ultimately mean that his calf and his foot angles were about 45 degrees when he started off running. That is the type of position that we see people coming out of the starting blocks with a 45-degree angle of their leg. We see when somebody starts to accelerate when they get a rugby pass, that we see when somebody starts to accelerate on a football pitch, the people that are really quick at getting off the mark. And having an understanding of how you start your run-up and then making that consistent will have a massive knock-on effect later on in your run-up, and more importantly, when you get to the time where you jump up in the air and land at the crease. So having a good understanding of how you start, maybe getting somebody to video you from the side on a phone so you get a bit of an understanding of that, seeing how consistent you can make that by leaning forward, getting your body going forward to start off with, and letting your body fall into the acceleration positions would be really useful. And then working out whether you're a side-on bowler, a front-on bowler, what sort, will dictate ultimately how fast you need to run in and bowl. There isn't a set number that I know for a fast bowler who bowls with front-on style to run in and bowl, equally the same for sideways on. So I couldn't give you a definitive, but having that information would certainly help us whether you need to maintain the pace that you're at now or whether it's something that you could look to experiment with by going a bit faster.
Run-up is one of those things, Lavers, in cricket that is all about athleticism, really, isn't it? You know, there's no cricket skill involved until you get to the crease. But the run-up itself is all about being athletic.
Yeah, it's probably obviously a very important part of what we're doing as bowlers, but it's something that's probably learnt away from the cricket field or the training ground, and also something that doesn't receive the amount of attention it probably requires sometimes. It is very frustrating, both as a coach and as a bowler, to be in that position where you do have a run-up that isn't stuttering and isn't fluent, and you know that you're kind of underselling yourself. By the time you arrive, you're probably travelling at maybe two-thirds or even half the pace that you potentially could be. So not getting that right obviously has an enormous impact on the final outcome of the speed. It's a bit like when Gareth was talking about generating that power, and you look at the biggest movements and the biggest muscles that are being worked. A lot of them come early in the movement for batting, and that's the legs and the hips. The run-up is a massively influential part of the final outcome when it comes to the bowling speed. So getting it right and getting something that you're comfortable with, and I think this is one of the things that does happen with bowlers, there's that crossover between the physical nature of the movement and actual the kind of mental belief and understanding that what they're doing is going to work and it is going to fit in, and they're not going to bowl a no ball. I often would go down the idea of taking them as far away from the kind of the wicket and the pitch as possible and the stumps and not just let them bowl once, but get them bowling as much as you can in different parts of the outfield, on places where they're not making an assumption that they're going to no ball or they're not relating it to what they would normally do. And that's a much safer area where you're going to have less external influence from things like where the umpire stood, where the lines are on the floor, where you usually jump from, all those kind of things. And that's more likely to give you a kind of a natural movement or a movement that's going to be a bit less inhibited, which I guess is what we're looking for, a nice free-flowing, uninhibited run and approach to the crease that's hopefully going to get us arriving there with a bit of speed. The other thing that we obviously do need, and we talked about how the side on and the front on bowlers will vary a little bit, but it's just that control and balance on arrival as well. Some bowlers will have actions and jumps that require them to be a lot more balanced than others, possibly because of a change of angle as they're approaching the crease, or something to do with the movement within their action might require them to hold a lot more balance as they're arriving. But that's going to be slightly different for everyone. But if we can arrive at high speed and also without any kind of anything restricting us on the way, and then we'll probably find our balance should be quite good as well. So take it away from the stumps, take it away from the wicket, go and find somewhere where you feel comfortable and you're not being influenced by anything else, and go and run and bowl when you're ready. It's something that's been done for years and it works pretty well. As long as you can get that measured out properly, you should then be able to transfer it back over to where you started and then hopefully run in and bowl and back your front foot to hit that line.
I'm joined now on the Pitch Vision Academy cricket show from South Africa. It's Damien Fuller. Now, Damien is going to be attempting a world record, which is to break the world record for the longest ever net session. And it's quite a long session, isn't it, Damien? How long are you looking to go for?
Hi, David. Yeah, thanks for having us. The world record currently on the Guinness site is 49 hours. I know there's been a Rwandan cricket captain who's just broken it recently. I think the evidence is still being checked by Guinness, and I think right. That's 51 hours. So I'm pushing for 55 and try and make it as difficult as possible for you Pommies to try and break it.
And it's not just for the sake of batting as long as you can. I know, you know, as getting a lot of practice is an important thing, but it's about more important stuff than that as well, isn't it?
Yeah, David, to be honest with you, I think anyone doing something like this has got to be pretty crazy. And obviously I've got something close to our hearts here at the Academy, where we're going to be looking at raising awareness in our areas and our communities for development cricket and less privileged guys that can't afford to train in our areas, and trying to raise money, to put towards a fund. We've got a non-profit organisation that, we've set up, and all the money raised is going to go towards these boys being developed in the next couple of years.
Okay, and if there's people listening to the show now and they're thinking, I want to find out more about that and maybe even watch it live, what would they need to do to get the updates as they come through?
Well, we've got a Facebook event page, and obviously our academy page as well, where guys can search us on Facebook, FP Elite Cricket Academy. Try and find the event. It's going to be live streamed as well on the internet, so while I'm batting, guys will be able to log on online and watch the event, and all those details will be posted on our page. Anyone wanting to watch or anyone wanting to support more information, will be posted on that page.
Fantastic. Well, best of luck, and Pitch Vision will be there as well, so we'll be posting up some video highlights and some of your achievements as you go along. So all the best, and we'll stay in touch and keep everyone who's listening posted to how it goes.
Thanks, David. Yeah, we really appreciate that, and we look forward to having Pitch Vision involved.
And that is just about all we've got time for on the show this week. There's one more thing we're going to do before we leave, and that is decide on the winner of this week's competition. The online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com is up for grabs. And Varun had a question about fast hands, and Nassif had a question about, well, fast feet, I suppose, his run-up. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I'm going to go with the power-hitting one from Varun, because it's something that we don't talk about so much. It's something that interests me hugely, and I'm looking to get better as a batting coach within that, and I think we can all benefit from it, because it's something that's very valid within the modern game.
Congratulations to you, Varun, and you can choose your online course from the ones available at pitchvision.com. And Gareth, if someone was listening to the show and they wanted to get their question answered and maybe win that prize, how could they get in touch with us?
They could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right. Social media is also available. Of course, the new Pitch Vision pages are going to be around very shortly. Keep your eyes peeled for them. And you can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, and Twitter @pitchvisionacad. If you want to listen to the show every week, you can do that by subscribing in your favourite podcast app. Just do a search for Pitch Vision Academy in there, and it's free. And if you want to get the show via the Pitch Vision website instead, you can do that by going to pitchvision.com/academy and clicking on the podcast link for all the details. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavis.
Cheers, fellas.
Cheers, guys. Thanks.